Recording's on.
Thank you. Would you like me to do a roll call, Michele?
I would love it. That would make me very happy.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and I don't think it's evening for anybody yet. It is the 25th of May, and this is the IRTPB call. On the call, we have Mikey O'Connor, Michele Nyland, James Liddell, Chris Chaplow, Paul Dear, Robert Mountain, Barbara Steele, Matt Serlin, Michael Collins. And for staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Olof Nordling, myself, Glenda Saint-Juéry, and Alice Jansen, who is the staff person helping Olof Nordling. And over to you, Michele. Thank you. I don't think we have apologies from anybody.
I think we'll do is we'll work on the basis that we have apologies from David Geezer.
Okay.
I know he was out sick. He might still be out sick. So
Okay.
we'll consider it that he gave us apologies since he did tell me he was out sick. Anybody
Okay.
else? Anybody else? We don't give that kind of dispensation to because I haven't heard anything. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're all full of fighting form. I don't, James, I don't think VeriSign will take beaver pelts, but I'm sure we could ask Barbara. Barbara, do you accept beaver pelts as a valid currency?
I'll have to check with our accounting team, but I'm thinking it's not looking too good right now.
How about rabbits?
Although the gold bullion may not be bad.
Okay.
Rabbits? Well, never know.
I think rabbits would work better for me because I'm actually trying to work out where on earth I would find beavers to shoot in Ireland. And that wasn't meant to be a double entendre. Oh, God. You just got me to say that on a recording. Never mind. Okay, moving swiftly on to something which is vaguely related to domain names. We have our agenda up on the Adobe Connect. Apologies for not circulating it earlier. Marika is running around like a headless chicken, and I'm running around like a headless chicken, so it didn't get it sent out to the list in advance, for which I do apologize most humbly. One bit we were looking at there is a proposed modification to recommendation D from Mikey. The current part of recommendation D is that the working group is considering recommending that WHOIS status messages related to registrar lock status be mandated in order to provide further details to registrants on why the lock has been applied and what can be done to change the status. The new version that Mikey is suggesting, the working group is considering a recommendation to standardize and clarify WHOIS status messages regarding registrar lock status. The goal of these changes is to clarify why the lock has been applied and how it can be changed. Does anybody have any feedback, issues, thoughts on either version? Do you prefer Mikey's version? Do you prefer the original version? Anybody? Mikey? James. James, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm trying to think here, Michele and Mikey. What is the exact change? It looks like we've broken it into two sections, two sentences.
Yeah, this is Mikey. The only reason I was just reacting to the long run on sentence. I wasn't trying to change the content at all.
Okay, so it's more of a construction change, less of a material change, right?
Yeah, hopefully no material change. In fact,
okay.
No, the intent is no change in meaning.
I think it's actually clearer than the original.
Yeah,
possibly.
I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something because I wasn't seeing a material change. So good job, Mikey.
Okay, so James likes it, I like it, Mikey likes it. Does anybody not like it? Okay, then we'll accept the new version as being the definitive one moving forward. Next item on our agenda. Okay. The latest changes and, okay, we'll talk about this. There's been some discussion about a dispute mechanism, and there's also registrant title concept. Marika, what's the registrant title concept? Could you refresh my memory, please?
This is Marika. I think that was the addition that was proposed by Kevin, and I think Paul raised some questions in relation to that on the email discussion last week. I think it raised the fact that the registrar provides the registrant with a kind of title or document that proves that he or she is the person that's entitled to make the ETRP, and then in further stages it can prove in that way that it's the person that's that started the process. I don't know if Kevin is on the call to clarify if I got that wrong.
Is Kevin on the call? I don't see him there.
No, I don't think he is.
Paul Diaz?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. Yeah, Marika, you got it right, and unfortunately, Kevin's not with us because the question I have, the concern that I raised on the list about this registrant title concept is simply, as I read it, registrars would now be required, because IRTP and this related ETRP policy will be mandatory. That means that registrars would now be required to issue every registrant under their management one of these titles. Kevin was offering flexibility, what that may mean. But to me, this is a radical change in the marketplace, because whatever this is going to entail, and every registrant will have to get one, because there's always the possibility that the name will be transferred at some point during its registration term. If you wait until the point of point of transfer request, sort of defeats the purpose, right? And you've got to have it in place because you want to, in theory, provide the registrant this credential. But for me, it's just, wait a minute, this is going way beyond any of the sort of tweaks that we had originally proposed in offering this, which will be, to use a U.S. political term, an unfunded mandate. This would be a significant administrative cost for registrars. And honestly, I can see it bleeding into other contentious policy debates like vetted registrants and who is, and others. So I just was, hoping, and if Kevin doesn't join us in a few minutes, can explicitly make the question on the list and hopefully get his input. But it seems to me this registrant title is a huge can of worms that really should be avoided.
Okay, there's Mikey, and then there's James, and I also put myself in the queue as well. So Mikey, James, and then me. Go ahead, Mikey.
Thanks, Michele. It's Mikey. I have another angle on why I think this is probably something that we should pass on this time around. I think that the scope of a title conversation is much broader than just inter-registrar transfer policy. I'm not necessarily ruling it out. I understand Paul's point. And agree that I would also be pretty uncomfortable trying to insert it into what we're doing. I wouldn't necessarily rule it out forever for all of ICANN, but I'd be comfortable trying to drop this concept from what we're doing right now.
James?
Yeah, very similar to what Mikey was saying, regardless of where I come down on this particular debate, and not surprisingly, it's probably closer to Paul's position, just more of a feeling that not really an appropriate inclusion into this particular process, because we're looking at something that's very narrow, IRTPs, and now we're to solve a small problem in that realm, we're creating much larger problems elsewhere. And I think that it's possibly it's worthy of discussion, just not necessarily here.
Okay, I put myself in the queue. I would strongly support everybody who has spoken previously. I don't think this is really suitable for discussion within the boundaries of IRTP, and it's like using a bulldozer to crack a walnut. I think it's going way, way, way beyond scope. And I can see it causing more headaches than solutions. Marika, in terms of the report... Oh, sorry, Barbara, go ahead.
Thanks, Michaela. It's Barbara. I agree with that, and I almost see additional security measures as being ways that registrars would be able to differentiate themselves in the marketplace. You know, go out and market themselves to registrants who have high-value domain names and, you know, put in place whatever mechanisms they feel appropriate, whether it be, you know, some type of an authentication or what have you. But I really think that it should be left up to the registrars versus being, you know, kind of pushed down their throats. And you know, I agree wholeheartedly with Paul that it is really, it's a huge effort that I think will be used probably fairly seldom. And I don't know that you could justify the expense associated with rolling something like that out.
Thank you. Michael Collins?
I bet he's on mute. Hey, Michael, I bet you're on mute.
Let's try this way.
There you go.
Hello.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your patience. I just wanted to remind everyone that while I agree with all the other speakers so far, I would like to remind everyone that because there is no real title to domain names, there isn't anything like this that exists that quite often for the purpose of proving title or changing title that IRTP is used, and that really comes into play for later on. But that's all for now. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Marika, I consider you to be our expert on process. As Kevin has made this suggestion, can we include something in the report about his suggestion, but that also that we other members of the group disagree with its inclusion, or how would we handle that?
This is Marika. I think we can indeed add, we can take maybe out the paragraph and put it a little bit separate and just saying, like, one member suggested to include such provision, noting that there was objection from other members to this, and maybe leave it like that and maybe suggest that the comments are invited on that specific part.
Okay. Fair enough. Anybody else have any other thoughts on that? Mikey, I see a hand up.
Yeah, this is Mikey McKaylee. Thanks. I think we might want to expand the nature of the description of why the rest of us are a little uncomfortable with this suggestion. This is almost verging on RAP scale.
But it's almost verging on what, sorry?
Well, you know, in the registration abuse policy stuff, we launched into some very broad, very fundamental discussions about domain names, and title is one of those. And so, in addition to, rather than just sort of the matter-of-fact summary that the rest of us disagreed, we may want to give a list of reasons as to why.
Okay.
Because I would hate to have that sit out there and have public commenters under the misimpression that this is something that we're really going to entertain. And suddenly
okay. We
find ourselves in the middle of a big debate about titles on domain names, and holy cow, I mean, that's probably a PDP in and of itself.
I'm going to allow Marika to jump the queue. Sorry, Paul, and then I'll come to you.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to respond to Mikey, it would be really helpful if you know, I know several of you already gave some arguments, but if you want to put in something in the chat, and I can incorporate that into the report and the reasoning for the objection by several of the working group members.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
Thanks, Michele. Mikey, I respectfully disagree. I don't think it's appropriate to have this group, including in this report, the list of reasons why, quite honestly, I don't want to raise any attention, any more attention to this particular suggestion than those members who support it feel it's due. The appropriate way to handle it is to say, you know, there was minority support for a concept like registrant title. You can even say there was one member of the working group support. You leave it at that. If it becomes an issue in the public comment periods, you already hit on it. This would be appropriate for its own PDP. It's not appropriate for us to, basically it becomes a rabbit hole that we'll be going down. So I feel pretty strongly that just take it out, put it in its own separate area, identify it for what it was, the view of one member, and, you know, if the rest of the community wants to weigh in on it, you know, we can cross that bridge if and when we get to it. And quite honestly, if we do, it's going to go back to council because it's going to become its own policy initiative.
This is Mikey. That's okay with me.
Okay, then, so can, does anybody have any strong objections to following the line of action as outlined by Paul? Now, I'll take that silence to mean that everybody thinks that Paul is wonderful.
No, Michele, it is Paul. Because Kevin couldn't be with us today, and we don't know if he didn't send regrets what the circumstance is, I think it would be a good idea to shoot him directly an email and say, look, this is what we plan to do. At least give him a chance to weigh in on the list, you know, responding to the exchange that was going on, because he may have a very persuasive argument and convince some others in the group, oh, wait a minute, that's what he meant. Remember the word title. We went around looking for a different word. He may not mean title in some grandiose way. It was just a noun that he picked. I just feel as previous chair for the other group and whatnot, when you have active members, it's great to give them an opportunity to flesh out their idea, ideally on the list, because he can't be here today. But before we just hack it out of the report, drop it into effectively a footnote, let's give him a chance to make clear what he's talking about.
Okay. Could you email him and CC the list?
Sure. I think that's probably the best way, just to keep the conversation we're going and everybody sees the full exchange.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm all for... I mean, just I would send it to him directly and CC the list, just
yeah,
to make sure that he actually sees it, as opposed to it ending up... He could have the emails for the list filtered off God knows where, so...
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I know I have some of my ICANN lists filtered somewhere which I look at from time to time, whereas other ones end up in my inbox. Okay, then. Looking at the rest of the... The other thing was with relation to the dispute mechanism. I think there was some fairly heated backwards and forwards on this as well. James.
I don't know about heated.
Okay, there was some lukewarm interaction.
Well, I think there was just a discussion, and I'll just go ahead and jump in with just an observation on my part that not quite as obvious as the title proposal, the disputing of the ETRP does get into an area where I'm concerned that that would receive significant pushback in the community because it expands the scope beyond just the narrow question of disputing transfers and gets into a larger question of disputing control. And again, I'm not discounting that there is a problem there. I just want to be sure that we're undertaking this cautiously and putting out the idea that it might make sense to have a means to decouple that particular proposal from the overall ETRP. I'm concerned if they're handcuffed together that, pushback on one might mean we would lose support for the entire proposal. And I didn't want to see, our baby go out with the bathwater. That's all. I'm not saying it's bathwater. I'm just using a metaphor.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation about the use of metaphors. Michael Collins?
Well, thank you. Well, first, I think that we should at least not, you know, I think that we have to be honest about this a little bit and admit that we are talking, the EPRP is talking about a mechanism to change the control of a domain name. It's not just to reverse a transfer. If it were to reverse a transfer, we could require that the registrant at the gaining registrar be the one that has to initiate it, and then it would resolve any problems about control. It, I think it's clear that the EPRP is about changing who controls a domain name. And in fact, we all talked about it. It's created to resolve hijackings. And I think by definition, a hijacking is a loss of control of a domain name. So I think that, you know, we have already created something, and so we're creating a mechanism to reverse a transfer without any dispute concerns me. However, I will say that as completely respectfully to you, Barbara, that as it's written now, the dispute mechanism is not particularly helpful. In fact, I don't think there's much point in having it in the document, because if one registrar is going to decide a dispute between itself and another registrar, how do you think that is going to, how often do you think they're going to hear for the opponent? It seems unlikely. So I would like to, I'd like to see a meaningful way to initiate a dispute if ETRP is used. And if we're going to not produce that, I would like to just remove the entire dispute part of the document, because I don't, you know, there's some people that oppose it, and I don't think it's meaningful. And yet the fact that it's in there may cause people that just glance at the document to think that there is a meaningful means to dispute an ETRP reversal. That's all.
James?
Hi, McKaylee. And just to be clear, what I'm advocating here is that we put some portability around the dispute mechanism so that it could be removed if necessary. I'm not suggesting that we throw it out completely. I want to see what kind of public comments we receive on this section, but I also don't want it to be tied quite so tightly to the rest of the process that if it becomes a problem that we would lose the other work that we have. So, again, I just want to be clear on what I'm advocating here. It's just a more modular approach to this particular section.
Mikey?
Thanks, McKaylee. It's Mikey. Remind me how the process would work. Is this a mechanism where, I've been distracted, and so I'm a little bit far away, but in the early part of the conversation where we were describing this, my recollection was that this was a mechanism to move quickly to restore the domain to its prior state, but then the other half was in order to allow time for a more orderly process to resolve the dispute to take place. Have we lost the second half of that? If so, then I'm with Collins for sure. But I thought that the main objective here was to have a quick way to get the domain back to where it was, primarily aimed at hijacking, but still allow a more thoughtful due process to take place to ultimately resolve the dispute. So if somebody could clear that up for me, it'd help.
Anybody want to respond to Mikey?
This is James. I think that that was our original intention, Mikey, and you know, I think that that's a reasonable goal for an outcome.
Mikey?
This is Mikey again. So, you know, I apologize for not staying on top of this document, but if we were to read through the red line right now, is the reference to that sort of more orderly ultimate dispute resolution process, is that now not in here anymore? Because if it is, then yikes, I think we need to at least acknowledge the need for that somehow. I'm with Michael. If we have a one-way ratchet that could be abused and not unwound, that could get pretty difficult, especially in transfers of high-value names where the losing registrant has second thoughts and uses this to unwind a transaction that the other party did in good faith. You know, that's troubling.
Michael Collins?
Yes, I was off. The operator took me off just for a moment, so I may not have heard the last comment, but I wanted to at least share my understanding of the dispute as it stands, the dispute portion of this ETRP as it stands now. I wrote something trying to accomplish what I thought we had originally intended, and it is changed now such that the original registrar, the registrar of record, a PTRA, excuse me for forgetting that for a moment, the PTRA is responsible for hearing any dispute between PTRA and the gaining registrar. And to me, that there's an important having a dispute resolution, I mean a dispute process where one of the parties is responsible for hearing the dispute. But it's just not it's not going to be. That's where it stands now. Originally, we had no means for disputing the ETRP in the document, and I tried to fix it. I may not have accomplished fixing it in a way that would have worked due to rules of the PDRP.
Does anybody have any comments on those?
This is Mikey again. Sorry to jump in without getting in the queue, but is there any disagreement with the notion that we need some sort of mechanism to unwind this? You know, there's really two disputes now. There's the dispute over the name, and there's the dispute over whether the ETRP was legitimate. And I'm less concerned about the dispute over the ETRP. But if there's no way to ultimately resolve the dispute over the name with some
what's
sort
the
of
difference,
interest
what's
party,
the difference, what's the difference between the two, Mikey? It's a bit I'm having a problem unraveling.
Well, it's subtle, and you know, I don't think it's a real important point. But you know, you think about the really famous cases like sex.com, where those parties would have used this to great advantage to one side, and there wouldn't have been any clear description of how that got resolved. Now that's an extremely high value name, but you know, there's lots of disputes that run down the spectrum. Just, you know, you imagine going back down to the web service hosting provider who is hasn't been paid, and there's a dispute over whether the service provider actually did a good job and deserves to be paid, and suddenly the service provider yanks the domain back and holds it hostage. I mean, those are sort of the two ends of the spectrum. I mean, there's got to be a mechanism in here to do dispute resolution, or else.
Okay, James.
Yeah, Mikey. I mean, I think what you're getting at is the area where I think registries and registrars are reluctant to wade into those alligator-infested waters, and you know, will point to the most appropriate and competent court of jurisdiction to resolve those types of issues. And my concern is that, you know, I don't know that we can. I don't know that we can create a an ICANN policy that can cover all of those scenarios that you've described. And I think you rightly pointed out that those would be a very small minority, very specific cases, and would you know, would likely be the boundary conditions. And that is kind of my purpose behind wanting to decouple this a little bit, is that we have a template of a proposal here that can, let's say, 80% of hijacking cases could be addressed satisfactorily by this. And I'm concerned that if we overreach to get that 20% that's out there that probably should belong in the courts anyway, that we could lose the whole thing. So, you know, and again, that's just what I'm after here. I understand the problems that Michael has identified. I don't have a good answer for them. I recognize that they are problems, but I just want to make sure that we're being as practical as possible as well.
Barbara, Michael Collins, and then Mikey O'Connor.
Thanks, Michaeli. This is Barbara. I mean, I think we're missing one thing, that, you know, the TDRP can be used in some cases. I don't think we want to, you know, go into how the TDRP is to be applied, because I think that's pretty clear as to how it works. But I think that we need to also take a look at, you know, the fact that if they're filing a TDRP, then they need to be able to do it based on the grounds that are available to them within that mechanism. And so, you know, if they're able to basically dispute this by stating that, you know, the authorization from the registrant was there and the registrant has appropriate rights to the domain name, then I think it's, you know, then it's one that could be filed on the basically asking for a remedy of approval of the transfer. But, you know, one of the main concerns that I had with the way this was written is it really put in place some things that really were not contemplated by the TDRP itself. That's all I had.
Okay. Sorry, who's next? Michael Collins, then Mikey.
It's that mute button again, Michael.
The mute button is causing part of that. Part of it was I was really trying to how to change my statement based on what Barbara just said. I think that if there is a way to be sure that we can identify that the TDRP can be used to hear a dispute caused by ETRP, not caused by an initial inter-registrar transfer, but one that is reversed by ETRP, if we can specify that some authorization, because I'm not, you know, the ETRP was not envisioned when the TDRP was written, and it's not clear to me that it can be used to reverse an ETRP. That's why I had written this the dispute that I did, to basically put it back as if the ETRP had never occurred, if there is a dispute, and let the TDRP dispute be heard as if the ETRP had never occurred. That was my motive. Now, if that doesn't work, I can understand why. It gets kind of confusing. But it seems that if we can authorize the TDRP to be used in cases where there's a dispute caused by the ETRP. I might see that as a solution. I'm not trying to specify how we resolve it. It's just that the clear thing is that inter-registrar transfers are used to prove control of a domain name, often in cases of a sale of a domain name. And having some history, I can tell you there were many times when I worked as a broker to sell domain names where I was neither the buyer or the seller, but putting the two together. And sometimes the seller of the domain name was quite happy early on, but when they found out that the buyer of this domain name was a Fortune 100 company and they felt like they could have gotten 10 times as much money for it, they were on my back as a broker. We were not brokers actually, but we provided a means to exchange these domain names confidentially, and I know that I've been involved in many cases where the seller of the domain name would have reversed the transaction and taken the possession of the domain name back if they could have, and I'm just trying to avoid that possibility. That's all.
Okay, Mikey, and then Barbara.
This is Mikey. I think that I'm with Michael on this one, and that at a minimum we have to point to something to resolve disputes. I think without that, I'm not sure that I care what. But
sorry, Mike, could you specify which disputes are you talking about?
Well, originally, I mean, presumably if it's a pure hijacking case and the person gets caught, then there's no dispute because the hijacker never comes back. But the situation that Michael's talking about happens a lot. It's not an edge case at all. There are all kinds of buyer or seller's remorse situations where the sale happens, all of the losing registrant's pals call him up and say, "What? You sold it for that? Boy, I'd have bought it for twice that. Geez, you got robbed." And then bingo, they've got this little mechanism that they can yank the domain back. And then no way to resolve what is now a dispute over a transaction. That's going to cause you registrars all. I mean, Michael was speaking as a registrar when he told you that story. That'll cause you all kinds of headaches.
Okay, Barbara.
Yeah, I could see that happening, and I would like to think that there would be some due diligence on the part of the PTRA to make sure that that's not, what the case is when they're filing an ERTP, that it is truly a hijacking case. The other concern that I had, and I think I put this on, in one of the communications on the list, is, the way the current dispute mechanism is worded, I have some concerns that, and I think James may have made comment relative to this as well, what I call the ping-pong effect, because it sounds like there's an automatic reversal in some instances on that. I just really see domain names being ping-ponged back and forth between registrars. One of the other items that I had pointed out is, and I mentioned earlier, is that, the TDRP could be a viable option, but the TDRP is really only a good tool if there is active participation from both of the registrars. And typically, I think, some of the other conversations that we've had is a lot of disputes never actually get to a TDRP because if the registrars are able to cooperate and communicate with one another, a lot of times they are able to resolve the issue amongst themselves, and they never have to take it to the TDRP. So, I know that there's been concern over having, registrars determining who is the appropriate registrant of the domain name. But it just seems to me that one of the reasons the ETRP is out there is because, for whatever reason, the PTRA is not able to get in touch with and work out the dispute with with the, I'm not sure what I want to call it, the new registrar, I guess. All the terminology gets a little confusing after a while. And so, you know, they feel as though, you know, it is an urgent situation. They're not getting cooperation, so they feel that they need to pull the name back.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on this? I haven't heard anything from Matt or Bob. Oh, but I do have Marika's hand up, so you're safe for the moment. Marika?
This is Marika. Maybe just a suggestion, as you know, I'm not really sure whether we're going to be able to resolve this question before the end of this call and before the deadline for publication. And a suggestion would be to include like more general statement, take out this part on the disputed ETRP claim and just put in something there. The working group, you know, is of the opinion or sees that there's a need to be able to dispute an ETRP, but hasn't reached agreement yet on an appropriate mechanism to address such a dispute and is requesting input from the community on how such a dispute mechanism might look or which elements it might have. Maybe that's a way that the group might want to consider in moving forward on this issue.
Okay, I've managed to out Matt Serlin, so let's take advantage of that. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, you guilted
me. Oh, and I've even outed Bob Mountain as well. Oh, this is really good.
You guilted us into it, Kaylee.
Hey, listen, what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly that. I'd actually agree with Marika. I think, you know, the reason that I've sort of stayed quiet on this is because anytime you're talking about dispute resolutions in the ICANN world, I mean, that to me is, as previous folks have said, that really is a policy development initiative in and of itself. And yes, we're talking about a dispute resolution process specific to transfer disputes, but I think Marika's suggestion of throwing it out there that the work group feels that there needs to be some sort of work done on some kind of dispute process, but we're not in a position to make that recommendation at this point and ask for further input from the community. I think that's probably the best way forward that I've heard.
Okay. Bob?
Yeah, I would agree with Matt. However, I just wanted to ask a question on the ping-pong effect. You know, I assume that when one of these is filed, when an ETRP is filed, there's some sort of decision as to whether it has merit or not. So there won't be. I would hope that you know that sort of vetting, or you know, even if it's light vetting, would slow down this frequency of having these domains yanked back and forth. I think the point made where if a domain is transferred and then there's some seller's remorse would not be considered an adequate reason to reverse the transfer of a domain. You know, there would have to be some kind of, you know, some basis for transferring that domain that would be awarded, right?
I think just answering you there, because I'm not sure what the exact status of the current wording on this is, but the original discussions that a subgroup of this working group, when we were working on this was something that we did consider, and Paul or James might be able to speak to that. One of you, please. Well, we did do something with it, but I can't remember where it went to. Paul, James?
Michele, it's Paul, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember, too. I'm not clear.
So I know we did discuss it as being a problem that we wanted to avoid, but I can't remember how we how we dealt with it. So the main thing was that we were trying to come up with some way that a genuine case of a domain being hijacked could be reversed in a quick and in a timely fashion. However, we didn't want it to be a case of buyer's remorse or people just being awkward or whatever. Michael Collins?
I've got to find that mute button a little easier. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, to answer Bob, I think that it's possible, according to the way it's written now, that a disgruntled seller may not necessarily disclose that to PTRA, that he may make a false claim of hijacking. At least that would be possible. That's all.
It is possible, is what you're saying.
Yes, I think it's possible. I mean, who's to say what people would or wouldn't do, but I think it would be it would be impossible, or it would be very difficult for PTRA to know if he was given a false claim of hijacking when, in fact, the registrant sold the domain privately.
Okay. Bob?
Yeah, I guess that would come down to then, you know, during the domain transfer, how is that documented? Was it sold on a legitimate, domain sales platform? At that point, the buyer of the domain would need to come up with the documents that prove that they had closed a legitimate sale, right? And that's sort of
what if the person selling the domain didn't have the right to sell the domain, Bob? I could prove that I bought the domain, but how can you? But that's not the problem.
So the problem then is a different. So the seller is claiming that he was hijacked. The legitimate owner of the domain was claiming he was hijacked, and it was sold by. Well, I guess you'd have to prove. Is the onus of the burden of proof, is that on the seller at that point?
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Michael Collins has a hand up. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I just wanted to answer Bob. I think that, but then he got off into the other topic. I was trying to keep that whole kind of admin versus registrant out of this, although it could be related. I think it is another issue. Where did we go right before that, Bob? I think that the ETRP does not have in it there's no anticipation that PTRA is going to contact the registrant at the gaining registrar. It seems to me that PTRA isn't obligated to even contact the new registrant at all. I'm not sure that would ever occur.
Okay, guys, we're coming up to 7 minutes to the hour, and we still have a couple of matters on the agenda, which I just want to cover quickly. With regards to all of this, yes, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I just wanted to point out as well that there were some other changes and comments that were made to the latest version by Barbara, and I just want to make sure that everyone has seen those and is okay with those. And as well, the question will be, what do we do with the comments that are included? Do we leave those in, or we just take them out and take them up in the second round after the initial report?
Anybody have any feedback for Marika on this? And Bob, could you press the mute button on your phone, please? Barbara, and then Mikey.
I'm fine. This is Barbara. I'm fine with us, kind of addressing the comments that I had after the comments period, if that works for everybody else.
Mikey?
Hey, I am too. This is Mikey, and I think that clearly what we need to do is dig back into this one hard. Certainly now that the excitement of VI has sort of died down a little bit for me, I can dig in a little more on this one, and I'll bet Michael can too. I think that this is surmountable. It's just it's probably not surmountable on this call or even before Brussels, but I'm not ready to throw babies out with bathwater quite yet.
Interesting use of a metaphor. I won't make any further references to it. Michael Collins?
Mute button, Michael.
I can't be muted. There's no way. I left it open. No, I'm sorry. I was. I'm happy with doing what Marika suggested and taking out all of Section 5 and just suggest and including that there is some concern about the need for a dispute mechanism, but not try to define it until after we get public comment.
Okay. That works for me. James approves. I think that's probably the best way to deal with it. Marika, if you could proceed in that fashion. Now, on the agenda we have here, we have a Brussels meeting schedule requested for Wednesday, 23rd of June, from 1600 to 1730, which is to be confirmed. Marika, when will that be confirmed? Do you know, or do you have any idea?
This is Marika. I think this schedule is supposed to be public 31st of May, so that
okay.
will be, I think, the date. I haven't heard anything back that that time doesn't work, but the problem is I don't have any insight yet if any other meetings have been scheduled at the same time that might conflict. So that might be one of the issues if, you know, if the meeting would need to move because for that reason. So as
okay,
soon as I have
perfect.
A confirmation, I'll post it to the list, of course.
Okay, thank you. Now, based on what how far we've got with the report and everything else, and looking at timelines and everything else, do we need to have... Oh, my dear. Do we need to have another meeting before Brussels?
This is Marika, because on the report itself, I'm hoping to send out an updated version probably sometime early tomorrow morning, and that would give everyone then still a chance to, you know, provide any last-minute edits, noting that, you know, those should be just, you know, not making major changes to the content, but just editing changes until, for example, Sunday night, so we can actually post a document on Monday. So then the question is if there are any other meetings needed, mainly to discuss how to run the information and consultation session in Brussels or go through the slides that we'll prepare for that meeting. But again, that can be done as well possibly by on the mailing list. So that would be the question.
James?
Hi, Michael. Just a procedural question here. When we kick off or release a report and kick off a public comment period in close proximity to an ICANN meeting, I think that in some cases we have requested an extended comment period to allow that folks are traveling to the meeting, traveling from the meeting, and then, you know, they have a week where they're pretty much unavailable. So if we can get an extended comment period, I would request that if we haven't already done so. And then the second thing is just as an observation for someone who is participating in a lot of different working groups is that some groups are preparing initial reports and some groups are preparing final reports. And I just feel like perhaps we could, the groups that are in the that are putting out initial reports like this one could yield to those groups that are putting out final reports to ensure that they don't have a lot of spillover work after Brussels. You know, because everybody's kind of racing for the same document cutoff deadline. So I just wanted to put that out there on the table.
I was with you right up to the last bit. What do you mean by the spillover bit, James? You lost me there, sorry.
Okay, so if you have two working groups, one's putting out its initial for Brussels, one's putting out its final for Brussels, and they start to overlap, it's possible that... you know, both of them could end up requesting extensions, and that there could be, based on the comments received,
extensions
could push back.
On the comment period is what you're referring to, is it?
Right. I mean, this group, for example, IRTPB, will continue after Brussels. We know this. But there are some groups that are trying to not just wrap up their report, but wrap up the entire effort by Brussels. And I think that, you know, we should just be respectful to a day or two, you know, and contending for the same resources, we should just make sure that they have what they need to do that.
Okay. I think, from what I recall, we discussed previously something about where we would get the report now, but we wouldn't open the comment period until after Brussels.
Yes, Michael, this is Marika. That's correct, because for PDPs, there's a specific requirement in the bylaws that public comment period should be 20 days. So we don't dare really have the room to extend that, or I think normally we run them for 20 days. So the idea or the suggestion was that we actually open the comment period after the Brussels meeting. So we have a discussion, an opportunity to discuss and alert people to the fact that the public comment period will come shortly and inform them on what is in the report and what they're expected to comment on, and then only launch it after Brussels, and then we can actually decide on, you know, which date would be appropriate, taking into account that, you know, people might take a week off after the meeting, so maybe it would be appropriate to start it, like, you know, 1 week after the close of the ICANN meeting, and then run it for 20 days. And just to note, on the final report, we actually normally don't run public comment periods on those. At least if you're referring to the registration abuse working group, that report will just go to the council for their consideration. There's no public comment period foreseen for those kind of reports normally.
So just to clarify, Marika, when would can we publish the draft report without opening a comment period?
Yes.
So we can do that, and then we can have a follow-up announcement that we're opening a comment period on this report.
Yes, I think with the publication, my idea is, because normally we do write an announcement when a document is available, we can point out there that we will open a comment period after the Brussels meeting and can provide the link to the comment forum, and then we can do another announcement when the forum is actually open. I mean, normally those two go in conjunction, but the problem is because we're limited here to 20 days, if we open the public comment period now, it basically means that it would finish halfway through the Brussels meeting, not allowing the group to actually present the report and the recommendations to the community. So in this way, I'm hoping as well that, by discussing it with the community and putting some of the questions that the group has out there during the meeting, it might help us as well to get more and better comments for the group to take into account for the second phase.
Okay. Perfect. Anybody else have any other queries on this process or anything, or any other comments at this time? So just to finally repeat the question, do we want to have a meeting next week, yes or no? Okay, I'll rephrase that. If I don't hear it to the contrary, there will be no meeting next week. Okay, there is no meeting.
Michele.
Hello?
Hey, Michele, it's Paul. I would just say let's, because like what I did with Kevin, I pushed him to comment to the list. I would just say, please, everybody, continue to monitor the list to weigh in because, I've tried to open the door wide to him to say, look, if you can convince people, give us your best shot, and it'll get reflected in the draft report. So please, people, the point is, check the list, make sure that you're monitoring it for anything that comes out because it may change your views.
Okay.
Michele,
Bob?
This is Mikey.
Oh, sorry. Bob's ahead of you, Mikey.
Okay.
Bob?
Sorry. I would, being new to this, I'm not sure if another meeting is merited or not, but it certainly seems like we have a ways to go. So to me, it would seem some way to continue making progress would make sense at that point, given where we're at. So.
Was that in favor of another meeting or against it, Bob? I'm confused.
I'm not weighing in it. I'm saying progress, if we can make progress without a meeting through, the offline approach that was just mentioned previously, I think that's okay. If that's not viable, then, if another meeting is the only way to get progress done, then I would say we should do that.
Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I just threw a diagram out on the list about what's now called ETRP. Back when I was doing it, I was calling it Transfer Restore, and I just wanted to highlight that I'd done that, and it might offer us a way to converse a little bit more about it, and if folks wanted to do that on the call next week, I'd be game, but I'm fine either way.
Well, I was working on the basis that we weren't having a call next week, because that we were going to take a lot of these comments and put them in after Brussels. That was my understanding, because I think we're kind of, I wouldn't say going around in circles, because that sounds a bit negative, but that we're trying to finish this on a deadline, get that out, publish it, open a comment period, and then we would restart. This is my understanding now. Feel free to disagree with me. That we would restart our meetings, say, a week or so after the Brussels meeting finished. But that to continue debating, discussing, arguing, whatever, on the mailing list in the interim. Mikey?
That was the whatever silence. Sorry about that.
Okay. Right then. If anybody has any other strong feelings or otherwise, please follow up by the mailing list. And I will speak to some of you probably later this evening, my time, which is this afternoon, your time, or whatever. Okay. Have a nice week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, McKaylee.
Thanks, McKaylee.
Bye-bye.